The views expressed on the following broadcasts do not necessarily reflect those of KHLT, Take 12 Radio, or our affiliates. The opinions on this show should not be considered as medical, psychological, or professional advice and are those of the host, co-host, and guest. Take 12 Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting are not affiliated with any particular 12-step fellowship.
One day at a time with its failures and fears. Portion of pain and burden of care, we must meet.
Welcome to Walking Through the Language of the Heart, a journey into the grapevine writings of Alcoholics Anonymous co-founder Bill W. And now, here are your co-hosts, Chris S. and the Monty Man.
Yes, indeed. Welcome aboard, my friends, to another episode of Walking Through the Language of the Heart with our good friend Chris S. He is on the line with me as we speak, ready to tackle part two of an article that we did part of last week, and that was why Alcoholics Anonymous is anonymous, if you've ever wondered that. Chris, how you doing, bud?
Good, Monty. Good. How are you? I hope Christmas and everything was really good for you.
It was excellent. It was excellent. It couldn't have been better. And I know that you guys had a good Christmas as well. We hope our listeners did. But now it's back to work, back to carrying the message that is worth some depth and weight. So
absolutely.
Take us forth here, my friend.
All right. So we're on page 214, about halfway through through this particular article. And, you know, just to start off, Monty, you and I have talked about anonymity. And, you know, this isn't really what he's talking about in this particular article, but we've talked about how it can be misunderstood.
Yes.
And how people can believe that anonymity is, you know, bottom level secrecy from neighbors, from workers, coworkers, from family even. I know people who, you know, were 20 years in AA before their family knew it. And I think that's a huge misunderstanding of what anonymity was put forth for, the reasons for it. I believe that if we can, you know, if we can increase our odds of being able to help people without it affecting press, radio, TV, or film, I think sometimes we should do that, don't you?
I agree. I think with the intent of being protective, because I know many people are very protective of their 12-step fellowship because it saved their life, right?
Yes.
But in the attempt to do that, I think in misunderstanding and not really doing our due diligence when it comes to learning about the fellowship and the ins and outs of it, we have fallen into a trap of not even recognizing each other on the street. I remember walking through a grocery store and seeing somebody from my 12-step fellowship in the vegetable aisle, and I acknowledged them just to say, "Hey, how you doing?" And they wouldn't even look at me. And later they told me that was because they were protecting their anonymity. And I'm like, wait a minute, how does anybody know in the grocery store where you and I fellowship?
Yeah. You know, it's funny, the longer I'm sober and the more experience I have, the more I really try to respect press, radio, TV, and film. And the less I worry about myself personally.
Sure.
In other words, please let me protect the fellowship. Please let me protect Alcoholics Anonymous from a black eye. But I'm just way less concerned today about my own personal anonymity. And some really good things have happened because of that, Monty. Because I've made myself known where I work, I get to help people's kids, mm-hmm. who I work with, you know, and even some of them. And it's funny, you know, a lot of them have like broken their anonymity with me, you know, in a very, very kind of please don't tell anyone way.
Yeah.
And I totally respect someone else's privacy where it concerns anonymity. I just think that as you grow and you mature and you trust in God more and more and more, that it's less important that that somebody knows you're in long-term recovery from alcoholism, you know?
Sure.
So what?
Sure.
You know, anyway, that being said, that probably has nothing to do with what Bill is talking about, but let's get going. Okay. At AA headquarters, we read the proposed lectures. They were about 50% AA and 50% our friends' personal religious convictions. This could create a false public view of us. Religious prejudice against AA would be aroused. So we objected. Our friend shot back a hot letter saying that he felt inspired to give these lectures and that we had no business to interfere with his right of free speech. Even though he was going to get a fee for his work, he had nothing in mind except the welfare of AA. And if we didn't know what was good for us, that was too bad. We and AA's Board of Trustees could go plumb to the devil. The lectures were going on the air. So obviously he's talking about one of the early anonymity breakers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this was written in 55. And they learned a lot of lessons about it, you know, press, radio, TV, film. This was a poser. Just by breaking anonymity and so using the AA name for his own purposes, our friend could take over our public relations, get us into religious trouble, put us into the advertising business, and for all these good works, the insurance company would pay him a handsome fee. Did this mean that any misguided member could thus endanger our society anytime or any place simply by breaking anonymity and telling himself how much good he was going to do for us? We envisioned every AA advertising man looking up a commercial sponsor using the AA name to sell everything from pretzels to prune juice. Something had to be done. We wrote our friend that AA had a right of free speech too. We wouldn't oppose him publicly, but we could and would guarantee that his sponsor would receive several thousand letters of objection from AA members if the program went on the radio. Our friend abandoned the project. But our anonymity dike continued to leak. AA members began to take us into politics. They began to tell their state legislative committees, publicity, of course, just what AA wanted in the way of rehabilitation money and enlightened legislation. Thus, by full name and often by picture, some of us became lobbyists. Other members sat on the benches with police courts, judges, advising which drunks in the lineup could go to AA and which to jail. Wow. Then came money complications involving broken anonymity. By this time, most members felt we ought to stop soliciting funds publicly. We ought to stop soliciting funds publicly for AA purposes. But the educational enterprise of my university-sponsored friend had meanwhile mushroomed. She had proper and legitimate need for money and plenty of it. Therefore, she asked the public for it, putting on a drive to this end. Since she was an AA member and continued to say so, many contributions were confused. They thought AA was in the educational field, or else they thought AA itself was raising money when indeed it was not and didn't want to. So AA's name was used to solicit funds at the very moment we were trying to tell people that AA wanted no outside money. Seeing what happened, my friend, wonderful member that she is, I think this was the person that started the NCADD.
Tried
to resume her anonymity. Because she had been so thoroughly publicized, this has been a hard job. It has taken her years, but she has made the sacrifice, and I here want to record my deep thanks on behalf of us all. This precedent set in motion all sorts of public solicitations by AAs for money. Money for drying out farms, 12-step enterprises, AA boarding houses, clubs, and the like, powered largely by anonymity breaking. We were next startled to learn that we had been drawn into partisan politics, this time for the benefit of a single individual. Running for public office, a member splashed his political advertising with the fact that he was in AA and, by inference, sober as a judge. AA being popular in his state, he thought it would help him win on election day. You know, Monty, there was somebody I knew. I actually knew this guy because my wife at the time had dated his brother for years, and so we knew and would visit with the family. But this individual was running for governor of New Jersey, right? He did not win, but in his advertising, he would say that he was in AA. And yes, I like to go to AA meetings, he would say in interviews. When you go to an AA meeting, you find out where all the good fishing holes are.
Wow.
I mean, that really was what was in the interview. and I was kind of new at the time. I maybe had 5 or 8 years sober, and I was horrified by that. And I guarantee he got a bunch of letters from AA members telling him to shut his mouth. You know what I mean? He did not win governor. His father was actually governor many years before. But anyway, that being said, that was one that I was semi-involved with. And here's the thing about politicians. I'm going to say something pretty startling, but I believe about 50% of the politicians out there are alcoholic, Monty.
Mm.
I really do. There was a speaker, one of my favorite speakers, Ray O, right? And one of the best speakers AA ever had. He was asked to do a meeting. There's actually a meeting where they have the Congress meets, right?
Yeah.
It's like a meeting once a year.
Yeah.
A recovery meeting for recovering congressional members, believe it or not. And the place was packed. Not only with them, but, you know, their aides and staffers and everything. And I'm telling you, you could hear by the applause that there was a couple of hundred people there. And so, you know, there's a lot of politicians that probably are AA members, but we're not going to find out about it because we don't know them personally, and they don't break their anonymity at press, radio, TV, or film, which is a good thing.
Don't you think that in the course of some of these big oopses that happen with anonymity breaks, as is common in other areas of the fellowship as far as maturing and growing, that they have been almost necessary for us to learn the things we've learned?
Oh, sure. You know, Bill Wilson himself calls all this stuff growing pains.
Yeah.
And he'll even admit he was one of the first and one of the biggest anonymity breakers. These are things that we've learned. Let's call these traditions best practices, okay? Mm-hmm. For the healthy perpetuation of our society, the traditions are best practices. A couple of pages earlier, he calls them sacrifices. Yeah, sometimes we need to make sacrifices for the fellowship that has so thoroughly changed our lives and for the better. You know what I mean?
Sure, sure.
Probably the best story in this class tells how the AA name was used to back up a libel lawsuit. Huh. A member whose name and professional attainments are known on 3 continents got hold of a letter which she thought damaged her professional reputation. She felt something should be done about this, and so did her lawyer, also in AA. They assumed that both the public and AA would be rightfully angry if the facts were known. Forthwith, several newspapers headlined how Alcoholics Anonymous was rooting for one of its lady members, name in full, of course, to win her suit for libel. Shortly after this, a noted radio commentator told a listening audience, estimated at 12 million people, the same thing. This again proved that the AA name could be used for purely personal purposes, this time on a nationwide scale.
Wow.
Files at AA headquarters reveal many scores of such experiences with broken anonymity. Most of them point up the same lessons. They tell us that we alcoholics are the biggest rationalizers in the world, that fortified with the excuse we are doing the great things for AA, we can, through broken anonymity, resume our old and disastrous pursuit of personal power and prestige, public honors and money. The same implacable urges that when frustrated once caused us to drink. The same forces that are today ripping the globe apart at the seams. Moreover, they make clear that enough spectacular anonymity breakers could someday carry our whole society down into that ruinous dead end with them. So we are certain that if such forces ever rule our fellowship, we will perish too, just as the other societies have perished throughout human history. Let us not suppose for a moment that we recovered alcoholics are so much better or stronger than other folks, or that because in 20 years nothing has happened to AA, nothing ever can. You know, he may talk about this, he may not, but Bill Wilson was given information. It was mentioned to him when he was putting these traditions together. You don't want the same thing to happen as that happened to the Washingtonians. And Bill goes, the Washingtonians? Who the hell were the Washingtonians? Mm. And he started to look into it. And Monty, the Washingtonians, this group basically started in Baltimore. It was a number of alcoholics who banded together, who said, let's form a pack. Let's form a not drinking pack, you know, and
right.
And that those six people ended up being, you know, hundreds of thousands in like 4 years. And they started out, with not drinking packs. Now, and remember, this was back in Prohibition. And so
these were temperance. These were temperance
pledge. I don't know if you've ever signed a pledge, Monty.
Yeah. The temperance pledge. Back then.
And so what happened with the Washingtonians was they didn't hold on to their primary purpose, and they never developed traditions. So their primary purpose in the beginning was, let's all stay sober. But it soon became the abolition of slavery. It soon became, you know, some mm-hmm. of them were wet and some of them were dry. Some of them wanted alcohol to be illegal, and some of them didn't. And there was all kinds of infighting, and there was a lot of vying for the spotlight, you know, to be the best speaker and the most sought after Washingtonian orator, right?
Yeah.
And all these things crashed the Washingtonians. And in about 5 years, they went from a couple of hundred thousand to none. And I can imagine most of them went back to drinking and probably died again. So Bill educated himself on the history of the Washingtonians, and I think that just fortified his resolve with this with these traditions, and the not seeking notoriety and publicity and all that.
Sure, wise move.
I think so. A really great hope lies in the fact that our total experience as alcoholics and as AA members has at last taught us the immense power of these forces for self-destruction. These hard-won lessons have made us entirely willing to undertake every personal sacrifice necessary for the preservation of our treasured fellowship. And you and I both are very fond of our fellowship, and
yes, sir.
Certainly we want the same thing.
Absolutely.
This is why we see anonymity at the general public level as our chief protection against ourselves, the guardian of all our traditions, and the greatest symbol of self-sacrifice that we know. Now, notice that it says at the general level is in hyphenated font.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Yeah, so he's making it clear where he wants us to be anonymous.
Yeah. So this is probably a good time for me to interject. There is a piece, I'm not going to quote it properly, in the book Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, where Bob is talking about anonymity breaks above the level of press, radio, and film and below the level of press, radio, and film. In other words, people accusing others of breaking anonymity in other areas other than press, radio, and film. And in doing so is actually a tradition violation. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Of course, no AA need be anonymous to family, friends, or neighbors. Huh, there you go. Disclosure there is usually right and good. Nor is there any special danger when we speak at group or semi-public AA meetings, provided press reports reveal first names only. We don't get press reports at our AA meetings anymore, but
no.
I think back in the day, there might have been reporters at some of the big meetings.
Can you imagine that? The guy,
I can't.
A guy in a hat with his little press notes.
Can you imagine that? Oh, man. The press section at the convention. But before the general public, press, radio, films, television, and the like, the revelation of full names and pictures is the point of peril. This is the main escape hatch for the fearful destructive forces that still lie latent in us all. Here, the lid can and must stay down. We now fully realize that 100% personal anonymity before the public is just as vital to the life of AA as 100% sobriety is to the life of each and every member. This is not the counsel of fear. It is the prudent voice of long experience. I am sure that we are going to listen, that we shall make every needed sacrifice. Indeed, we have been listening today. Only a handful of anonymity breakers remain. So in 1955, there were still people that were telling Bill to pound.
Yeah.
That's unusual. I say all this with all the earnestness I can. I say this because I know what the temptation of fame and money really is. I can say this because I was once a breaker of anonymity myself. I thank God that years ago, the voice of experience and the urging of wise friends took me out of that perilous path into which I might have led our entire society. Thus, I learned that the temporary or seeming good can often be the deadly enemy of the permanent best. When it comes to survival for AA, nothing short of our very best will be good enough. I love that saying. The temporary or seeming good can often be the deadly enemy of the permanent best. What a great saying.
Yeah.
That is.
Yeah. I wonder if that's where, because I've heard people say before, you know, the best is the enemy of the good. You know, I'm wondering if that's where it came from.
Yeah. The good is the enemy of the best.
Yeah.
Yes. And I bet you that's where it comes from. You know, so I think 90% of the AA members in 1955 were reading The Grapevine. I think 5% or less today read The Grapevine, you know. But so you can really believe that these articles really shaped the philosophy and the operational methodology of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yeah, yeah. When I first came into the rooms of recovery, and I dabbled in several different fellowships. Literature other than the basic text, for instance, Narcotics Anonymous is called the basic text. AA is called Alcoholics Anonymous. There just wasn't a whole lot of literature other than information pamphlets. I didn't see any Grapevines. I didn't see any the NA Way magazines. I didn't see anything like that.
Yeah, you know, it had kind of dropped out of favor. I mean, and I think it's because you can't shake a stick without hitting a meeting. And the AA Grapevine was supposed to be the meeting in print, the meeting that you can't get to.
Right.
You know, and so when you and I got sober, we didn't have to worry about where the next meeting was going to be.
That's right.
It wasn't too far away. You know what I mean?
Right.
Right. We want to maintain 100% anonymity for still another potent reason, one often overlooked. Instead of securing us more publicity, repeated self-serving anonymity breaks can severely damage the wonderful relation we now enjoy with press and public alike. We could wind up with a poor press and little public confidence at all. For many years, news channels all over the world have showered AA with enthusiastic publicity, a never-ending stream of it, far out of proportion to the news values involved. Editors tell us why this is. They give us extra space and time because their confidence in AA is complete. The very foundation of that high confidence is, they say, our continual insistence on personal anonymity at the press level. It's just unusual, I think, for these reporters. You know, please don't use my name.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want the credit. I don't want the applause. Please don't use my name. Mm-hmm. It's just unusual. Never before had news outlets and public relations experts heard of a society that absolutely refused personally to advertise its leaders or members. To them, the strange and refreshing novelty has always been proof positive that AA is on the square, that nobody has an angle. This, they tell us, is the prime reason for their great goodwill. This is why, in season and out, they continue to carry the AA message of recovery to the whole world. You know, every once in a while, this doesn't happen too much anymore, but it still happens. Somebody will be doing a term paper or somebody will be doing a thesis, and it'll have to do with, you know, addiction treatment or alcoholism recovery or something. And someone will come into an AA meeting, you know, with a pad and a pencil.
Yes.
Ready to grill us on, you know, what the heck goes on here. And they'll walk in, Monty, and they'll go, can you point me to the person in charge? And we'll go, nobody's in charge. well, can you tell me what all the rules are? Well, there's really no rules. Well, you know, how much does it cost? Well, it really doesn't cost anything. You know, and they're like dumbfounded.
Right, right.
Because, what else is like that? Not too much.
Mm-mm. I've actually seen that happen. I've watched a couple of times several years ago people from the local community college come in writing a paper. So I've seen that. It's pretty humorous.
Yeah, we're always very kind to them, but they go away probably more bewildered than when they got there. If through enough anonymity lapses, we finally cause the press, the public, and our alcoholic prospects themselves to wonder about our motives, we'd surely lose this priceless asset, and along with it, countless prospective members. Alcoholics Anonymous would not then be getting more good publicity. It would be getting less and worse. Therefore, the handwriting on the wall is clear, because most of us can already see it, and because the rest of us soon will. I'm fully confident that no such dark day will ever fall upon our society. For a long time now, both Dr. Bibe and I have done everything possible to maintain the tradition of anonymity. Just before he died, some of Dr. Bob's friends suggested that there should be a suitable monument or mausoleum erected in honor of him and his wife, Anne. Something befitting a founder. Dr. Bob declined with thanks, telling me about this a little later. He grinned and said, for heaven's sakes, Bill, why don't you and I just get buried like other folks? Now, I've been to both of their graves, and Dr. Bob has a ginormous, beautiful stone, okay? he does. It's the size of a Volkswagen. And Bill has a little flat, you know, maybe 10 by 14, one of the flat gravestones.
Yeah.
Very, very modest. So I think Bill, you know, was into this even more than Dr. Bob was, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
Last summer, I visited the Akron Cemetery where Bob and Ann lie. Their simple stone says never a word about Alcoholics Anonymous. This made me so glad I cried. Did this wonderful couple carry personal anonymity too far? And when they so firmly refused to use the words Alcoholics Anonymous, even on their own burial stone? For one, I don't think so. I think that this great and final example of self-effacement will prove of more permanent worth in AA than could any spectacular public notoriety or fine mausoleum. Another thing, Bill is not really talking about this a lot in what we read tonight, but he believed so much in the value of humility. Mm-hmm. Humility and accurate self-appraisal. You know, not thinking too little of yourself, but certainly not thinking too much of yourself. Mm-hmm. He understood that that was really key to recovery, that right sizing of one's ego. And Harry Thibault, who was a psychiatrist that very early on became really influential to Bill Wilson, would talk about the rebuilding of the ego leading to relapse. You know, he would point to that as a relapse warning. You know, the rebuilding of one's ego. And I don't know about you, Monty, but I've seen that happen with certain people in certain groups, haven't you?
Oh yes, absolutely. Yeah. I've watched people. I'm thinking of one guy who was a secretary of a 12-step fellowship, and he chaired that meeting probably for 4 years straight. I mean, there was no rotation, nothing, and he ended up drinking himself to death.
Yeah. Time and time again, I am hearing about people with long-term recovery, you know, really good AA members, mm-hmm. Picking up. It almost was happening, you know, to me once a month, hearing about somebody I really care about who I would not put on the ready to relapse list, drinking again.
Most recently, too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you always want to point your finger to how did they drop the ball? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? What mm-hmm. weren't they doing that they needed to do? And you know, it's never like one thing. It's always a combination of little things.
Sure.
And I think one of the big impacts was COVID. And I think the people that did not go to Zoom or did not do basement or outside meetings or whatever, I think they're continuing to relapse, even though they've come back. You know, they've lost a lot. They've lost a lot. And mm-hmm. and they're more at risk than they were before COVID. That's just a theory of mine. You know, it seems to make sense to me, whether it's true or not, you know.
Well, and, you know, I wonder if that may be because people so often become meeting dependent and not God dependent. And so when the meetings go away, they're out in the ocean without a life preserver because they didn't know how to lean on the Creator. That's just a thought. I when I hear somebody say, oh my God, I got to get to a meeting or I'm going to drink. First thing I'm thinking is, okay, well, let's get you to the meeting. But is that where your dependency is? Because, you know, the meeting doesn't start till noon. Are you going to drink between now? It's 10 o'clock unless you get to the meeting. I agree. Yeah. Yeah.
I agree. And I think if you're the type of person who is meeting dependent, and you've really not embraced the 12 steps and you really don't have a deep and abiding relationship with God, you're not working with other people. And
that's right.
So the thing that ensures immunity from drink, intensive work with other alcoholics, drops off when the meetings drop off. Now you're hosed. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah. It's funny because I just listened to, Chris R. speaking, and I think you were at this convention. It's been a while back, but I was just listening to him talk about where in the heck did this idea come from that you have to be 5 years sober before you can sponsor somebody? And he was talking about the immunity to drinking and working with others and so forth. And he was shaking a stick pretty hard. It was great.
Oh, man, listen, you know, nobody got as much praise and nobody got as much criticism as as Chris. And I got to tell you, he's a close personal friend of mine. I yeah. love that man like you wouldn't believe. And he walked point for a lot of us. He said the things that we knew were true with a complete lack of fear.
I mean,
he abandoned himself completely to the truth. And sometimes the truth can shake you up. And I can't tell you how many people he shook up. I remember I brought Chris to speak at my home group. It was about 2001. Right.
Yeah.
So it was about like 23 years ago. I brought him to speak at my home group in Burnersville, and a whole bunch of people came, like they would go to a circus to see a circus freak. Right. Now there was a bunch of us who knew what he was going to say and loved them.
Yeah.
But there was a bunch of people. Who is this Chris guy? And he laid it on the line in our group. Right.
I love it. And
there were people that were shook up. But let me tell you something, you know, about 10 years later, it became orthodox to bring somebody over to your house, open the big book, and start going through the steps with them. And that was not being done.
Mm-hmm.
That was not mm-hmm. being done when he was, except by a few of us, when he was sharing his message in that group. So he's had an outsized positive influence on alcoholics who are interested in recovery, and I have the utmost respect for him because of that. And
yeah,
and I'm grateful. I've had the opportunity to do a bunch of stuff with him. I've done many workshops with him, and I always look forward to it. I think we've got one coming up in Pennsylvania this coming year that he and I are going to do. So anyway, he's someone who, you know, deserves our everlasting gratitude.
Absolutely.
And respect.
Absolutely. And I just want to give him a plug here. Listeners, if you want to hear some great stuff, just go on YouTube and type in Chris R. There's a lot of Chris S is on there too, but there's a lot, but you will find them and. Just, you know, put your seatbelt on because you will be challenged, I promise you.
Yeah, and if you're sensitive, stay away from the stuff in the 90s because he worked very, very hard to not cuss behind the microphone, and that started to happen around 2002. So if you have a sensitive, delicate, snowflakey kind of perspective, you might want to stay away from his earlier stuff because he was mad.
Yeah.
He was mad that Alcoholics Anonymous wasn't better than it was.
Well, you know what, Chris? You know what? It's very. It's hard not to get mad when you see people dying around you, and it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah, when you see people going to meetings and then stopping going to meetings because there wasn't enough power in the meeting to keep them there.
Yeah.
You know, you know where the power comes from, Monty, right?
Yeah. Yeah, from God. In fact, he was talking about this when I was listening to him, he was talking about treatment centers saying, okay, well, you can do the steps and you can do this and that, but we, you know, because we're funded by, you know, the government, we can't talk about God. He goes, well, then there's, it's useless. Then if you can't talk about God, then the person's not going to get the help they need. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sitting, I was doing some house cleaning in the audio booth, and I'm underneath the desk where all the crazy wiring is. You're just frustrated, right? And he's going, and I'm just going, preach it, baby, preach it. I'm yelling out loud. I'm going, go, Chris, go.
Yeah. He fires you up. And then you go into a meeting and you just go crazy.
Yeah. It's like, why happened?
He's got you amped up. I love the guy.
Yeah.
Okay, we don't have to go to Akron, Ohio to see Dr. Bob's memorial. Dr. Bob's real monument is visible throughout the length and the breadth of AA. Let us look again at its true inscription. One word only, which we AAs have written. That word is sacrifice.
There it is.
So that's the, that's, we finished up that big, long article, Monty, next week is going to be respecting money. And then the week after that, I can't wait for the week after that, because problems other than alcohol is going to be in 2 weeks. And you know you and I are going to have some fun with that.
Yes,
and
indeed.
And maybe get some listener reaction.
Yeah, that would be great.
We'll see.
Well, I've already got some listener reaction on part one of this article. And from a listener, the concern was, and let's address this if we can as we close.
Sure.
Aren't you and Chris breaking anonymity at the level of internet and radio? So I have a simple answer for that, but I'll let you tackle that.
So my answer would be simple. You don't put my picture up and you don't use my last name.
Right. And my answer to that is you may be able to guess it, I don't know, but you will never hear me say what fellowship I actually claim membership in. You will hear me say things, I was at an AA meeting one time and I heard a person say this really great saying. It was awesome. It meant so much to me when I heard it. But listen, I go to a church that I'm not a member of on occasion. I don't eat at the same restaurant, you know, but I'm not claiming membership. People don't get it. We are very careful. We've been very, very careful to make sure that we have a disclaimer at the beginning of our shows. Take 12 Recovery Radio is not affiliated with any particular 12-step fellowship. We do not represent. I do not represent. And I'm just very careful not to do that. Now, if you think you can figure it out, well, good on you. But there is no tradition break here at KHLT and Take 12 Radio. But I do appreciate the person's concern because they, you know, it's a valid question, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
So, and again, one of the most famous quotes that I've ever heard you say, anonymity does not mean secrecy.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. All right. All right, my friend. Well, good show again next week, respecting money. Listeners, stay tuned to the very end of the music here as we sign off to see how you can catch up on all of these shows, Walking Through the Language of the Heart and other workshops with Chris S. Until our next broadcast. This is the Monty Man along with Chris, and we are wishing God's perfect serenity for you.
For more recovery workshops with Chris S. and the Monty Man, visit our website at take12radio.com and click on the Recovery Workshops banner.
This has been a broadcast of Take 12 Recovery Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting.
This has been a Chicken and a Pig production.
Kitty, 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 kitty. Meow, meow, meow.
Woof, woof.